every truck, every car, every mode of transportation has to come through Pennsylvania to get to the northern eastern seaboard. And so going up and down our state, unfortunately, allows for a lot of level of trafficking. And many of those that are trafficked are children. They can't speak for themselves, they can't defend themselves, and they can't stand up for themselves. And many of our DAs really find their hands tied because the laws don't keep up with the thoughts and the deeds of a lot of our folks that are trying to hurt our kids. So by changing this definition, it allows our law enforcement to be able to prosecute the traffickers.
Expanding this definition would be a more proactive measure in protecting children and youth?
For the most part, I think can't be a harsher penalty out there than to make sure that they get what they deserve. Hi, I'm State Representative Cheryl DeLosier, and I'm proud to represent the 88th District in Cumberland County. And each summer, I'm very lucky to have different interns that come in from different, whether in college, some in high school, and we get to have a lot of conversations in our district office about the many issues that affect Cumberland County, that affect the state as a whole, and as we get through the budget process, and we have a lot of conversations about issues that are important. So, Rohan, why don't you introduce yourself?
My name is Rohan Jawale. I'm a current senior in Cumberland Valley High School, and I'm interning for Representative DeLosier.
Great. And I know that there are a lot of different things that you worked on this summer, getting some information on different things that may not have been in your books at CV. You know, something different. But what issue did you zero in on that you had the most interest in?
So today I want to focus mainly on children and youth reform. Okay. You know, your main legislative issues also include domestic violence, supporting veterans and military families, and mental health. All are important issues, and also issues that I'm also passionate about. But today I want to focus on children and youth.
Great.
So let's start. Describe your experience serving on this committee, including the colleagues you worked with and the type of legislation you have discussed in your time in the committee.
Yes, I was very proud to be able to be the chair of Children and Youth, and I had a great teammate, my Democrat counterpart, Pam DeLisio. Her and I teamed up and looked at a lot of different things that were important to children in our state. And it was really important that we take a look at the foster care system. Mm-hmm. We had many on-the-road meetings dealing with our children and youth advocates within our counties. We have 67 counties, and each and every one of them deal with really important issues with our kids. And they try to keep all of our youth safe. And that deals with a lot of foster children that are in our system and making sure that they are in the best possible place that they can be, whether it's with kinship care or whether they are in a foster care situation. And so we did legislation dealing with both of those types of issues. We also dealt with a lot of the DHS within the state and different regulations that needed to be updated. And Pam and I worked on an omnibus bill, a very large bill, that dealt with updating a lot of the standards for our children and youth practitioners within each of our counties. So in Cumberland County, we're very lucky. We have advocates that give their heart and soul to the kids of Cumberland County, and they work hours and hours just trying to make sure a kid is safe. And sometimes, unfortunately, that means removing a child from a home. And that's really a hard decision to be made.
Sure it is.
So if we can make that a little bit easier and make sure that we're doing what's in the best interest of that child, I think that that's the right type of legislation to work on. So those are some important issues that we worked on and ones that I believe will have the longest impact because those are ones that we're just making sure a child is safe. And I think that's a priority that we all should have.
Yeah, it doesn't belong to just the Democrats or Republicans. It's our, it's in our human tendency to, care about children and youth.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I just want to shift the focus to more recent legislation regarding children and youth reform.
Okay.
So one specific piece of legislation you have sponsored recently was House Bill 940, which seeks to expand the statutory definition of sexual abuse or exploitation under the Child Protection Services Law to explicitly include both trafficking in minors and involuntary servitude. Could you explain what this bill would do in practical terms and how it would further protect children who are victims of sexual abuse and exploitation?
Certainly. One of the areas that I have been very focused on is rape crisis and domestic violence as well. And but trafficking, unfortunately, we are a commonwealth, but we're also called the Keystone State. And the reason that we're called the Keystone State is because every truck, every car, every mode of transportation has to come through Pennsylvania to get to the northern eastern seaboard. And so going up and down our state, unfortunately, allows for a lot of level of trafficking. And many of those that are trafficked are children. And those that are trafficked, you know, unfortunately are in a situation of vulnerability. For some reason, they can't speak for themselves, they can't defend themselves, and they can't stand up for themselves. So absolutely, redefining some of what the trafficking laws say allows our law enforcement to protect when they make a raid on a particular entity and bring in those that not only are being trafficked, but those that are doing the trafficking. Some of those definitions have to catch up with the bad guys. And many of our DAs really find their hands tied because the laws don't keep up with the thoughts and the deeds of a lot of our folks that are trying to hurt our kids. And by trafficking children and trafficking women, typically it's more of trafficking of those two. Certainly men and boys can be trafficked as well, but predominantly you see women and you see young children. And so by changing this definition, it allows our law enforcement to be able to prosecute the traffickers and allows for those that are being trafficked, not necessarily to get a criminal record, but then to pull them back into services.
So in other words, would you say expanding this definition would be a more proactive measure in protecting children and youth?
Absolutely. It gives our law enforcement another tool to be able to take those people that are think that it's okay to traffic and sexually exploit a young child for their own benefit. And that's just wrong on every level. And so giving the law enforcement in all of our 67 counties the tools to be able to prosecute appropriately and harshly, in my opinion, those that do this to women and children, for the most part, I think can't be a harsher penalty out there than to make sure that they get what they deserve.
Yeah, absolutely. And I really like the point you made earlier about children not being able to speak for themselves. And this is exactly why the main reason I picked this topic is I'm a big believer in standing up for like the voiceless. Mm-hmm. And this is the perfect way to do so.
Absolutely.
So I want to talk more broadly. So I want to talk about like if other states already have existing laws that mirror House Bill 940, and if they are working in these states in protecting children and youth.
Well, I believe many times what we need to do in all 50 states is take a look at what's happening and working in other states.
Yeah, absolutely.
So why reinvent the wheel, right?
Yeah.
If we're going to try something, let's try and learn from Illinois, learn from New York, learn from New Jersey, learn from Texas, learn from any other state that may put a law into place and see what does work. And what is it that they did wrong, you know, that we don't agree with, and make sure we don't do that same. And that's what a lot of, in all honesty, many times when you go to a conference with the national legislators and you're sitting down and having a conversation, you know, that's the dialogue that I think is most important to say, hey, what did you learn from this? Like, what would you do differently? We're trying to do that here in Pennsylvania. Now, every state has its own umbrella of how it needs to work. And every state does it a little bit different. So you have to take that into consideration. And we have a different, you know, Pennsylvania has, you know, it's a very purple state. It has Republican ideas, it has Democrat ideas, it has independent ideas. And, you know, if you talk to a state that's much more Democratic, they might do it a certain way that would not pass in Pennsylvania. Or a state that's more possibly Republican than Pennsylvania. You know, you have to be able to recognize what Pennsylvania needs, but learning from the other states in what has worked and what hasn't worked, when the rubber hits the road with those that are the advocates and those that are doing this job on a day-to-day basis, I think that that's very important to recognize that we have a learning curve when we're putting a new law into place. Let's learn from somebody who's already done it.
Absolutely. Now, I want to move on to a different topic on children and youth reform, ensuring family stability. Maintaining stable and healthy family units is a priority in the Republican caucus. One specific piece of legislation you have co-sponsored is House Bill 350, which is currently in the Senate Judiciary Committee. This bill seeks to adopt the Uniform Parentage Act by enacting uniform, predictable legal pathways for recognizing parentage, reducing litigation, and enhancing family stability for custody, support, insurance, etc. Mm-hmm. How would this bill ensure all of these things in order to provide for greater family stability if passed?
Well, what this bill deals with, and this is a bill that had a lot of contention that went along with it, and the reason that I supported this bill was because at this point in time, surrogacy and IVF are two ways to expand your family. And they are two ways that I was I did not have to use, but anyone who wants to expand their family through either of those means absolutely should be allowed, and it is right now. It is accepted here within the state of Pennsylvania. So this law did not change anything. Right now, there are no laws on the books that deal with IVF and surrogacy. And actually, that leaves a lot of that legislative authority in the hands of the court. And the court has turned around and said to the legislature, we need guidance on this. You know, we are out there talking a lot about the fact that we don't want our courts to legislate. We want our courts just to do their job, which is interpret the law. And that's fine. That is what their role is. They shouldn't be legislating.
Yeah, absolutely.
So in the absence of law, that is what they're doing. And the courts are saying we need that guidance from the legislature. So that is what the Parentage Act has done in many other states. And it's been successful in other states. And again, a little bit different here and there as to what's in each bill. But the goal and the purpose of this bill is simply to say that if somebody is, you know, I'll tell you the story as to how this went into place. So right now there was a couple that had a child through IVF. So the child was biologically connected to one parent. The child was not biologically connected to the other parent. Before the child was born, the parents split.
Oh, okay.
So the parent that did not have any biological connection to that child had no standing in our courts, except by what has been passed in the past, and courts use that to predicate their decisions. Absolutely, but there is no law that stipulates and gives that non-biological parent standing and rights as a parent. Mm-hmm. So what the Parentage Act basically says is what we have seen in courts over the last 50 years, mm-hmm. which says that even though that parent was not biologically connected to that child, they were the intended parent of that mm-hmm. child, and therefore have standing to be able to say that they are the parent of that child as well. And you have, in this situation where you use IVF or you use surrogacy, you have heterosexual couples, you have gay couples, you have different situations across the board, but there's always going to be that one parent that does not have that biological connection to that child, and that's the vulnerability. And so this bill simply, you know, and some of those cases have ended up in court for years. Yeah. And that's where it comes to the stability and the, you know, lack of litigation that we're trying to get to. Whereas that parent, it is established by law that that is the intended parent. So it was pretty straightforward. I know that there was a lot of pushback by one particular sphere of influence when it comes to certain things. But I will say, and I have said in the past, that opposition came from an entity that didn't support gay marriage, that doesn't support necessarily IVF, or doesn't support surrogacy. So it wasn't necessarily the capability of giving a parent standing that they opposed. It was the idea of using IVF or surrogacy in order to expand a family, which I believe, you know, anytime someone wants to expand their family and share love with a child, that we as government officials should be supporting that.
Yeah, and we'll talk about that opposition a little later. And also, you may agree with me here, but being a mother or father shouldn't just be about the biological ties to that children, but whether you're actually there for that children and raising them to be good citizens.
Absolutely.
So I believe this bill would actually provide families with that, or parents with that resource regardless of the conception, method of conception.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think that, you know, that's a good point to be able to say that, you know, there's a lot of people in our communities that may not have, you know, through step parents as well, whether it's, you know, all our families are made up of very eclectic mm-hmm. ways of doing it. Yeah. And as we started this conversation talking about the safety and love of a child, mm-hmm. You don't have to have a biological connection to a child to love a child and to be there for a child and want to be a part of that child's life. Mm-hmm. And so this bill is specifically talking about the parental rights and responsibilities that mm-hmm. someone might have for a child. But in the long run, it's really to the benefit of a child to have people around them that love them.
Yeah, and I do believe it is a beneficial for the long run. As you can see, like, fertility rates for men are dropping, and then, like, traditional methods of conception might be less popular in the mm-hmm. future. So this bill is definitely thinking about the long run.
Yeah.
So, as you may know, this bill has bipartisan support. Mm-hmm. In fact, the prime sponsor of the bill, Representative Benjamin Sanchez, is a Democrat. Mm-hmm. Why do you believe that this bill has bipartisan support?
Well, I think, again, you know, we mentioned the fact that safety and love of a child is not a Republican or a Democrat issue.
Yeah.
It is a people issue. It is an issue that affects our families and many of those within our state and our Commonwealth. And, you know, when someone wants to be a parent, that is something that is changed my life, I can tell you that. You know, my two kids are everything to me, and mm-hmm. That is what I wanted in my life. And when you want to give your love to a child, I don't think that that comes from a particular political standpoint. Yeah. I think that's just your heart reaching out to a child.
Absolutely. And like you mentioned earlier, there was opposition to this bill, mm-hmm. of course. So that leads to my next question. So despite having bipartisan support, House Bill 350 still faced criticism, especially among faith-based advocacy groups. Mm-hmm. They argue that this bill and its redefinition of family directly clashes against traditional or faith-based values. So what is your response to such criticisms about the bill?
Well, I think that I respect their viewpoint in the sense that they have every right to have that viewpoint. I don't agree with it, mm-hmm. Mainly because I believe that, yes, sometimes if you have a situation where natural conception is not going to happen, that we have the science and we have the capability to be able to create life and allow for a family to grow. And I don't believe that all of the dollars that we have from our federal government, our state government, you know, we're very lucky where we live here in Pennsylvania. We have so much medical facilities. We have, you know, the UPMCs and the Penn States and the Pinnacle Health and, so many different types of medical research facilities. We have our universities. We have Penn University, we have Penn State University, University of Pittsburgh. We have all of these research dollars coming into our state for many, many different reasons. And fertility is certainly one of them. And we have been able to advance in this medical capability to allow for the conception to happen with some scientific help. And I don't think that that should be something that is denied. Other people feel that that is not the right way to go. I respect their opinion. I disagree with it. But that's what this democracy is about. We're allowed to have different opinions, and we're allowed to debate them, and we're allowed to try to work our issue and get buy-in. Yeah. And that's the democratic process. And that's the process that I love about public policy, to be honest, is that debate, is that capability of having a conversation about the facts, about, you know, your interpretation might be different than my interpretation. But the end result is that, you know, to be able to get enough buy-in to do the math problem, which is getting enough votes in the House, enough votes in the Senate, and the governor's signature on something that we believe will move Pennsylvania forward. So I do believe that, you know, debate is a good thing on any issue, and I think it keeps everybody honest and answers, you know, brings up questions and answers other questions, and we will continue to have that debate, I'm sure.
That is all I have. Thank you for sitting. Thank you for taking your valuable time with me to
Absolutely.
Discuss about child and youth reform. I much appreciate it.
Well, thank you. Thanks for your time in the office this summer. Yep. It's been great to have you, and it's always interesting to get different points of view. And I know that Cumberland Valley, you'll be heading back there. So have a wonderful fall and enjoy the new school year. And we'll miss you in the office, but I'm sure you'll come back and find us.